This recording, Massachusetts 8, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Karma Gets a Cure is copyright Douglas N. Onaroff, Jill McCullough, and Barbara Somerville.
Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the territory. So she was very happy to start a new job at a suburb private practice in North Square near the Duke Street Tower. That area was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there, there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, that itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling Karma, Karma, which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name. Karma was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her, but Sarah had a different idea. First, she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire. So Sarah was able to hold on to Karma and gave her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of venison. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. I can't imagine paying so much, but Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. Well, I was born in Boston in 1940. My parents came from Ireland, probably in the 20s. And I'm one of 7 children. And we went to parochial schools, the whole family. And then I went to public high school. But I was born in Boston, in the Dorchester section. Grew up in more or less an Irish neighborhood. Generally, the area was mostly three-deckers. And these three-deckers were typically five-room houses, five rooms, and 3 floors, via kitchen, 2 bedrooms, a dining room, and a living room, or a parlor, they used to call it in the old days. And in my particular family, we'd all left with 9 people there. The dining room became a bedroom for my parents. Well, I went to, after getting out of grammar school, parochial grammar school, I went to a public high school. It was a technical school where we had various shops. You could take a college course if you wanted to. I took a college course for a couple of years. Then I got into a technical course. I had drafting for 4 years. I had woodworking courses, sheet metal courses, machine shop courses. And after getting out of, graduated from high school, I got a job at a civil engineering company as what they called in those days was a plan clerk. And you just took drawings to the printers and had them made copies, ran, did various messenger work. And eventually I started on as a junior draftsman and continued on. And the next process was to become a regular draftsman. And there was some large, in those days, these were basically civil engineering companies who were building highways. These employees were, they were employed with 200-300 employees. And I did that for several years, and then I went and I went to work for a map company for a while. And I stayed there maybe for a year or two. That was pretty tedious work. What they call Leroying, just Leroying street names all day, wasn't too adventurous. So shortly after that, I went to work for a structural engineer. And I was a little more, that was something new for me, and it was more diversified. And I stayed there for maybe 30, 35 years. The place actually went out of business. I then went to work at Harvard University as a groundskeeper. And I've been there for maybe about 11 years now. Growing up in Dorchester, it was typically it was basically an Irish neighborhood. There wasn't an awful lot of money around. Most of the immigrants came here with not an awful lot of education, but they were extremely hard workers. And we lived close to the beach. We spent an awful lot of time at the beach. If we weren't at the beach, we were at the ballpark. Sports was very central to our lives in those days. There wasn't much. We had no automobiles, so you either went to the park, or you went to the beach, or you hung around the corner. And typically, the park and the beach were a little more fun. I'm sure the parents encouraged the kids to get involved in sports. Keep the boy in sports and keep him out of the courts was something that they said in those days. That turned out to be pretty truthful. And then we would occasionally go to, we'd go to the beach, we'd go to Castle Island. It was a place where the Irish immigrants would meet. And, you would walk around Castle Island. The airport was there and the boats were there. And it was a place where people would gather also, but it was also a place you could go walk around and enjoy the ocean. And it was fairly close to home. As you say, since there were no automobiles. But, and it's still, it was at the time called the Irish Riviera. That's where most of the people in Dorchester and Southie would go. And it hasn't changed. The generations, still go there. And, it has been a focal point of the Boston Irish, people for an awful long time. Yeah, I grew up in Dorchester, but typically right near the South Boston line. We spent as much of our youth down at the ballparks and the beach, which are in South Boston, and as I say, typically half my time was spent in Southie. And when I went to high school, I had a bunch of friends, had a lot of friends that grew up in the projects of South Boston. They were pretty much the same as us, as near as I could see. They, most of them were first generation Irish, and we had an awful lot in common.